The podcast you're about to hear is a comedy show intended for an adult audience, and it contains explicit language. All opinions are our own, and we may sometimes go on tangents that are not at all about figure skating. Strap in, enjoy, and remember, our safe word is Quad Sal. Let's go. Welcome to the Iced Tea Podcast, the podcast where we spill the tea on figure skating. My name is Megan.
I'm Neda. Hi, Megan. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. I'm so excited to be back for another great season of figure skating. How about you?
Do you think it bodes well that I started laughing the second you said that?
No.
I'm genuinely so excited. We have been, softly coming back. Off-season happened, and obviously Challenger events have been happening. But for us, for the podcast, I feel like the real start is the marathon that we put ourselves through now with the Grand Prix season. And it's happening.
It is. And I justify that to myself because, first of all, the Challenger series can be, kind of hard to find reliable coverage of if you're in America. But mostly, I just feel like that's none of my business because I don't always want to see – I don't want my first – impression of everyone's program to be like the worst they've ever done it.
Yeah.
And like they're only going to get better from there. I want to give them a few chances to like shake off the dust on the ice in a competition. And then when they're on the Grand Prix stage, I'm like, okay.
I agree. I feel like by this point, most people have, done their programs a couple of times and we usually get final or near final costumes, which I obviously care about so much. And I agree that I feel like earlier in the season, in like late August, all of September, all of that, there's a lot of people seeing someone do any program for the very first time and be like, well, that's it. They sucked it this year and nothing's ever going to be good
so
again.
Jover.
It's Jover. And
for Kaori Sakamoto.
I didn't even say Kaori. Like, it's so many people.
But she popped into your mind, didn't you?
She hasn't left my mind. Let's be so fucking fair. Oh, yeah. Speaking of which, let's introduce herself. Because it's the Olympic season and usually people who don't necessarily follow the sport as obsessively and deeply as most of our listeners and ourselves do, there might be new people. So let's do the pitch real fucking quick and then we can get into the most weird Grand Prix beginning because we started in France and that's like a whole other thing that we need to talk about.
Yeah, the overarching shadow over this whole episode that you need to know about is that Netta has vegetables in the oven. And so we're on the clock with the veggies.
No, we're not. My roommate is taking care of my veggies.
Oh, okay. That's good. I was worried. We are a podcast. We're two friends. We're two skating fans. And
hey, let me hit you with this. We've known each other for a decade.
I know. That's fucking weird.
We met in grad school where we did experimental theater with each other against each other for 2 years. And because of
that, we somehow got MFAs about it.
We got MFAs about it. They let us get an MFA in understanding how wearing a bruise-colored nude illusion is or isn't theatrical. And we'll talk about that.
Well, so I've been thinking about this a lot, actually, and I think it will come up a lot because of the way that certain programs are this year. We are not, technicians. And
no.
Netta is like, an adult figure skater, and, they started really seriously skating, a few years ago. And so they're starting to, get their jumps. I'm garbage and can't stand up on skates barely. And so we're not really commenting on, the technical stuff as much. We're looking at it from a perspective of what we understand, which is, theatricality and, basically artistic choices and, why make specific choices, why specific choices work, why specific choices don't work. And that includes, music. I'm a musician and, costumes. Ned is, an amazing costume designer. And we both have experience with all of it. But yeah.
We get a little bit into, I feel like, the, human side of things. We've always wanted to really talk about skaters and the things surrounding them, not just as this finished product that we see that does, perfect revolutions in the air and however many spins and all of that in the most technical way. We get into the personal things behind it, not in a gossipy way. Very, very important. If you're looking for gossip, there's other places for that.
But in a completely absurd way. So, like, we will say, like, Kaori Sakamoto drives around in the fucking Apple car from Busy Town. Like, we'll make a joke like that. It doesn't mean we really think that or believe that. So jokes, joke rules apply. A lot of this is funny. Also,
a lot of this is funny is a great thing to say on an allegedly comedy podcast. Hi, you know what? Everyone. That's I promise really this confident. Is funny. I promise it's funny. No, point being, please don't take us too serious. Please feel welcome into our metaphorical studio. Hang out with us. Have your own opinions. We are not an authority.
Yeah, our opinions matter about the same amount as yours, to be honest. Yeah. Like, we're not in the pocket of anybody. U.S. Figure Skating stopped answering my emails, like, 5 years ago. Like, we are, like, nobody cares what we say other than, like, just people who think we're fun to listen to. So, like, have fun.
So, welcome. Oh, one last thing that I have to say. I've been feeling really, I don't want to say defensive, but I've been feeling some, I think, internalized misogyny or something about when I watch and when we cover, I react to every single costume and I go, oh my god, this dress is so pink and sparkly or whatever, and then I'm like, you fucking bitch, you
know me too.
Dumb little woman, why would you care about that? But the thing is, it's part of the whole thing, it's part of the whole package, and it's part of the story that we're being told, and I am trying to go into the season having unpacked that gut reaction for myself. And with the understanding that sometimes, oh my god, that dress is so pretty, or holy shit, what is this blouse and why are we wearing it, is valid criticism.
So I have two of my nieces recently discovered that I have a podcast, and I have had a podcast for 6 years. They're 6 and 8. And they don't really understand what a podcast is, but they got really excited about it. And they decided that they were going to make their own figure skating podcast because that was what cool people do, because that's what Auntie Maggie does. And they don't know, again, they don't know what a podcast is or really much about figure skating at all. So the podcast consisted of the two of them kind of sitting together and saying, figure skating together at the same time. And then they said, pretty costumes together at the same time. And they, before they made this, my sister, this happened all before I woke up because they wake up at like dawn. And my sister told me that she overheard them like planning this before they did it. And they were having a little like, you know, a little planning meeting, a little production meeting.
Oh my god, they were having a production meeting. I'm gonna cry.
They were. And one of them was like, what do you think they say in an ice skating podcast?
Great question.
And the other one was like, apparently the answer was like, she just yelled really loud, ice skates.
And she's right.
And she's right. And I told them they were totally right about everything. And then I showed them like about 4 minutes of one of our Patreon streams, because they don't understand audio only media. It's just not a thing for children. So I showed them like 4 minutes of one of our Patreon streams, and at first they really liked it. And then, about 4 minutes in, they were like, this is really boring. It's just talking. And I'm like, yes, that's correct.
Yeah, yes, it is just talking.
But anyway, ice skates, pretty costumes. They kind of nailed it. They kind of got our ass. So that's basically what this is.
Pretty costumes. Let's talk about them. The way we do this for the Grand Prix series, and honestly, most of the season, is that we will, on this here main feed episode, talk about whoever ended up on the podium at whichever particular event we're talking about. And then honorable mentions and everything else goes to Patreon, Twitter, wherever we can put all of our thoughts and opinions. So what we're about to talk about right now, oh my god, official, is the 2025 Grand Prix de France, which happened in Angers, and people ended up on podiums, and we gotta talk about it.
Do we know why it was France first this year?
I don't know. I'm sure there's a real answer. And I'm sure I must have missed it because all of those moves happened in the beginning of the summer and I was too busy consuming truly my weight in shrimp.
Not just two?
No, not just two shrimp. Many, 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 many shrimp.
Deep cut for the long time listeners.
Do you want to talk about men first, because it's such a beautiful segue? Speaking of people who've probably had two shrimp.
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to start with the men's podium. And right out the gate, what a great way to start our coverage season. Bronze ended up in the hands of Nikai Gadze from Georgia, which would be fine if he was not accompanied by the shrimp ramen woman herself. The witch, the grand witch. I don't know what to call Eteri Tudberidze at this point, but I call
her the Ultra C. That's my thing.
That's clever. That's clever.
That was the one thing. My one tweet last year that got on the like viral tweets roundup from figure skating was, if I can get a tweet in there, that's like my ultimate achievement of the year. And so mine was the one where somebody said like, there were no Ultra C's at Euros. No, she was there. And then I put a picture of Eteri. So that was me. And that was like my one brush with fame in the community last year.
I'm so proud of you. I'm genuinely so proud of you.
So the Ultra C was there. Okay. So here's the scoop. In general,
we simply cannot go into this.
Yeah, if you want to know the scoop about our beef with her and everything in general, I would recommend listening to stuff probably from like around the last Olympics, to be honest.
Go four years back and just listen to every single episode.
Yeah, and in terms of our policy on, I think, leading up to that and then since, we've just kind of not covered skaters coached by her as a matter of like kind of protest and also kind of like we don't really care.
And also, there's only so much to say about it. It's usually so fucking bad and so fucking embarrassing.
We're gonna have to
reckon with AI and athletes, you know, the fucking Russian athletes showing up under a different flag and all of that later in the season. Nika, however, I do want to say, even though he is coached by the Ultra C herself, who is also Georgian, by the way, he is fully a Georgian guy, so it kind of feels geopolitically evil for us to just be like, well, we don't talk about the Russians, so we're not gonna talk about him.
And like, Georgian people are cool. I know some
oh my god
Georgian
I love
people.
Georgian people
I know a... you know what crazy mm. crazy concept I'm gonna throw out here.
Oh no.
That you can't paint an entire country's population with a single brush ever under any circumstances.
Crazy. No, ever. So here's the thing. If Nika continues to podium, which, please God, if he continues to podium, we're probably not going to talk about it because there is only so much to say. But we, and the peek behind the curtain is as follows. We were like, oh, we're not going to talk about him, right? I just want to talk about blah, 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 blah about him. And we realized that we actually had some shit to say. So in a very, very exclusive scoop to celebrate that he finally ended up on this fucking podium because he's been fourth at his Grand Prix events basically since he started going to Grand Prix events. So I imagine that felt good for the guy and like, congrats, I guess. Here's what we have to say about it. Where do you want to start?
We can start with the short program. I will admit that I didn't watch his short program because of like stuff I had going on last weekend. Some of the events I was able to watch completely, and then some of them I had to kind of skip through like the replays and the scores and just watch the programs for time reasons. And in that, I also fast forwarded through him because I knew I wasn't probably going to end up talking about him. Ha ha, pie on my face. Egg on my face? Something on my face.
Something has happened to your face. It's
so you're going to tell me about the short program because I don't know.
I don't care about what he did in the short program and like anything about it. I do want to shout out the music, which is fucking awesome. I do want to say he has been working with Benoit Richaud this year, which I said it on Twitter, but I'll repeat it here. If I were Kaori Sakamoto and I saw Benoit sharing a kiss and cry with Eteri, I would probably have a mentee be the likes of which we haven't seen in a very, very long time. But that's a completely different thing, right? Benoit is a better choreographer than Nika has ever had. And that's great for him.
Nika has ever dreamed of.
And it seems to be working for him. Like, if I'm giving this person, you know, some leeway, like completely getting all of my biases and personal opinions out of the way, he has improved in like how he engages with his music and all of that a little bit. He's still not my favorite. He's never gonna be, and that's fine. The music they have picked for his short program is so fucking cool. It's by a Georgian band whose name I will not attempt to pronounce because I can't and I'm not smart enough to. It goes so incredibly hard. And it's like folk rock with like Georgian folk elements, but it's like contemporary and it's weird. And I don't say weird in like a, oh, it's like a culture I don't know kind of way, because Georgian music honestly sounds a lot like Bulgarian music.
Georgian music, Fox.
Source. It's awesome.
It's my favorite music in Civ 6.
I love Georgian music. I remember when I was very, very little, there was like this folklore festival every summer. And that's where the first time that I saw the Georgian dancing, where there is a single guy with a gigantic skirt and he's doing the spinning and stuff. And it has fascinated me since. And I can't stress this enough. This program is not folk music, but it's this rock band that's clearly like drawn inspiration from like Georgian folk, and it's so weird. And one of our followers, I'm so sorry, I'm blanking on whomst, someone replied to me like tweeting about it with like, oh yeah, I already want to look up this album as well. I have since listened to the album and all of it bangs. So if not anything else, I've discovered some obscure Georgian music because of this. And honestly, that's a win for me and probably a win for the country of Georgia.
Hell yeah. It was just weird to see Benoit and Terry together in the Kiss and Cry, which is, without saying too much, something that will come up again later this season for
us.
Oh,
God.
it very well might. Okay, the free skate. I did watch the free skate because I was, I'm working on a sweater. I'm trying really hard to knit. To finish the sweater I've been knitting for 700 years. I'm almost done. And I thought, okay, let's watch the men's free. And then during the repeats, I will do a couple rows of my sleeves. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, okay, we'll leave Nika on just so I can get a few more rows in, right? But then mm-hmm. I was like kind of captivated. I like the costume.
Okay.
But mainly because it really reminds me of fall foliage in the way that it's like green with some like bright fiery red in there. And I'm really in my fall foliage loving era at the moment because it's fucking October.
Okay, so I'll
ask you
again in December because I'm concerned.
In December, it's going to look a little like Bad Christmas Elf for sure. But right now it hit for me for sure.
Okay, I respect that. We're open-minded here. We're left-leaning and woke. And we accept each other.
We do. So, okay, a question I have for you, mm-hmm. which I don't know if you'll remember this. I have no memory at all. I guess I've eaten too many fucking protein waffles with lead in them because I can't remember anything. But have we told the story on this program before about our experience with the song Sail in graduate school?
I don't think we have.
But you know what I'm talking about, right? Yes. That's like a load-bearing story in our friendship.
Uh-huh. And please tell the story to the people.
Okay, and like if you have heard it before, just pretend you haven't. So we went to graduate school together in an experimental theater program where our first year, our whole cohort was what, like 11 people, 10 people? Uh-huh. I forget 11. The exact number. 11 people. And we did this thing where we each had to bring in something that we found artistically compelling. Like a video of something, I think was the parameters. It was like mm-hmm. a video of something we find artistically compelling, and that was the only parameter. I think I brought in Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared.
Yes, you did.
Which I stand by. And it's a good reminder.
I don't remember what I brought in.
You brought in Conchita Wurst, I think.
Oh my God, yes, I did. Of course I did.
One of our classmates, who I will try to keep so anonymous in every possible way, uh-huh. They brought in, it was like an anime music video kind of
thing.
Which
we respect. We love AMVs.
We love an AMV. Like, fuck, who doesn't love an AMV? Of the song Sail by AWOL Nation, and they told us that the first time they heard the song Sail by AWOL Nation, they were driving on the highway, and they had to pull over on the highway because their breath was taken away by the song. It was an experience that floored them to the extent that they could no longer safely drive on the interstate because of Sail by AWOL Nation. It had such a profound effect on them. And it changed my life. The amount of effort it took me to not laugh, I think, did permanent brain damage to me.
I'm doing that right now because I don't want to be challenging to edit auditorily. I really hope but someone's like, driving right now and they have to. We're doing like an Inception thing where someone hears this story while they're driving and they have to pull over because the story is so insane and they're laughing. Oh, crying, laughing, whatever. So hard.
I mean, it's a good song. But
I will say, It's one of those songs where I hear like the intro and like the slow build, and I'm like, oh my God, no. Like, are we, it's 2025, the big year 2025, are we still doing that? And then you get to the first sale, and I'm always on my feet and I'm always yelling along. So something yeah. in there works.
Something also that I learned recently, sort of by accident, is if you are in a context, like a customer service context or a food service context or whatever, where the word sale gets thrown around a lot, a really, really, really judicious, like tasteful, like once every six months, sort of like somebody says like, oh, can you like cancel this sale? And then you just go, sale! It fucking kills. Like with everybody of every generation, you just have to keep it so infrequent that when it comes out, it's like that's a great joke for you, especially if you have like normie coworkers who don't understand your like quirky internet humor. Like throwing out a sale like every time, 10 out of 10. You're welcome.
Do you think that was Nika's strategy was to just unite us through sailing?
I watched the program up until that point, knowing sale was coming. And mm-hmm. was I paying attention? Not really. I was really just kind of girding my loins for sale.
And then it just kind of starts creeping up on you, doesn't it?
It sure does. It's like, is it? Is it? Oh my God, it is. It's already started.
You know what else? You know what else I love about this program? And what? Shout out to Benoit and his team. I don't know if Cedric was involved in this. It doesn't say. But the very first piece that starts this free program is a piece called Sailing, unrelatedly. Mm. And I would like to imagine that whoever had to mix this music just opened Spotify or whatever music platform of their choice and was just like, what are songs about sailing? Like, how do we build up to sail? Let's just see what else is there. And I'm sad that it went with that and not like, what do you do with a drunken sailor? Which would have been very different, but also quite interesting
program. Or like Come Sail Away, or like Sail Away With Me by David Gray, which would have been bizarre, but I don't know why that popped in my head. So it is a Benoit, and I really truly would not have believed you if you told me that, but I just looked it up, and it is. Here are the choreographic highlights for me. Mm-hmm. Benoit is, he has earned my respect as perhaps the most apt men's figure skating choreographer. Yes, he does beautiful work for the women, but in terms of the men, he so fucking all over the place with his own quality and consistency and success with his work that I think it is just a match made in heaven for the discipline of men's figure skating, right? When he's on, right? And then when he's off, it's like, what the fuck did you just make me watch? So
Benoit's body of work is in itself menning.
It is, exactly. He is like the embodiment of menning. He is the platonic man. He is so man.
He is so man. We all know he's, may or may not, I don't know, people dislike him. I continue to be a Benoit stan. Everything this man has done has worked to just like make my little brain feel enjoyment.
It will start a conversation. Sometimes it pisses me off, but it will start a conversation. And that is what we like for this. I have
never once been neutral on a Benoit.
Right. Yeah, you're not going to see like a boring Benoit. So, okay. The pieces of choreography that stood out to me. When Sail first kicks in mm-hmm. and Nika is doing the fucking, I don't know what that is called, but like it's like you're on a Nordic track and you're just like, with like one foot forward, one foot back, and then sliding them back and forth. Like, what is that called? I don't know. I think it looks like somebody's on like a ski machine at the gym. It was goofy as fuck. And I laughed so hard that my mom and her boyfriend were like, what were you laughing at? Like, what? Figure skating isn't supposed to be funny. And I was like, no, you're right, it's not. But sometimes.
Sliding, cha-cha sliding to Sail.
Oh, man. I love every time they said Sail, and he like just kind of flopped up like a flying squirrel. Like, that wasn't really a move. He just kind of launched like the cat in the vine. And it was like, yeah, I get that reference.
He does indeed sail. I do love all of the ski thing and the little shimmy he was doing. Where
he had a little shimmy. What was that?
Where it clearly, like, I feel like somewhere back in the creative process, Benoit and probably Nika himself had a conversation of like, haha, that's a song that people know. They will have a reaction to it. We're like winking to the audience a teeny tiny bit. And then performance day comes. And I think Nika is too busy, you know, being a competitive skater, jumping his big jumps, all of that, to remember that there is an element of like wink, wink. And he just shimmies and there's absolutely no one behind the eyes.
It was, weirdly enough, I'm going to compare it to the last program you would ever expect me to compare it to, okay. Another Benoit, the Richter one that Brady Tennell did with the red dress like 1,000 uh-huh. years ago, where she, it was either Max Richter or Carol Richter, and now I can't remember, but I think I saw it live at that Nationals that I went to in like early 2020. That moment where she's like holding a pretend cane and doing a little grapevine a la like old school, mm-hmm. like, you know, Fred Astaire, kind of like old Hollywood dancing.
Sure.
It was giving like sort of that.
Oh my God.
But
deadpan. Honestly, frankly, I would be happy to see him enjoy that program because I feel like some of those silly, goofy moves will make a lot more sense if there is like a glint in it.
Yeah, like he's Deadpool, right? Like he can be goofy.
Yeah, I don't know. That's been our coverage of Nika Egadze, I hope, for the rest of the season. Do you want to talk about a French man?
Well, I sure do.
So, Adam Chao-Hinfa ended up in silver, and he did it the only way he knows how, which is by being so far back in the short and then showing up and being like, yeah, I was possessed yesterday, let me do an insane free skate and still end up on the podium, which is becoming a thing, which has been a thing. And I'm prepared at this point, but it stresses me out every time. But my God, do we have... Speaking of Benoit's, we're just carrying right through so many things to say here.
When you said, do you want to talk about a French man, I assumed you meant, do we want to continue talking about Benoit Richaud?
We have to talk about the costume.
This was my journey that I went on. Mm-hmm. I'm going to paint you the full picture of the journey I went on with both costumes, okay? Mm-hmm. I, at some point, I'm sure this summer, did read what the programs were going to be, but then I forgot because of the lead waffles. So I am going into this like, okay, this is short. I wonder what his free is going to be. Guess we'll find out tomorrow, okay? So this was the energy I was bringing in. The short program, the entire time, all I could think of was that this was the outfit that George Michael wears in the tableau of Arrested Development when he's like the never nude. And then I was like, oh my God, it's perfect because that's Da Vinci. Wait, no, I lied. They were doing the Creation of Adam. I remember they were doing Creation of Adam. And I was like, okay, well, then that joke doesn't really work. But then the universe gave me a present, which is mm-hmm. that his free skate is the Creation of Adam.
It's the Creation of Adam. I will say, kind of going backwards, I love this free skate so much.
Oh, it's fucking rules, yeah.
I think it's so clever. I think the little wink there that his name is Adam and they're doing Creation of Adam is perfect. I do like that costume. I'll tell you right now, I don't have too much to say about that free skate because I was so wrapped.
Well, I'll tell you something about that free skate. You tell me what you were going to say. Say all the nice, like, legitimate things.
The nice, legitimate things are that I was so busy watching him do the thing where he crawls his way back onto the podium. And it was so... I'm so excited to see this. It brought me back to, I've had like a bit of, you know, an up and down relationship with Adam because of his whole backflips for everyone platform that he's decided is the most important thing that he's doing. But I remember all the way back in the day when we would talk about how he's the only like actor on ice. He's the only one who like really like fucking digs deep in that shit. I kind of remembered why during this free skate.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't possibly tell you moment to moment why right now. The other thing I wanted to say is, yes, he did a backflip, whatever. Like, everyone does that at this point. Who gives a shit? The knee slide that he has started putting in, which I would personally do instead of the backflip, but he had both. The one where he's on his knees and goes, like, all the way back on his back.
It's like a spider lunge, and it's spinning, and it's everything.
It's so gorgeous, and it works so well, and it's so, like, triumphant in this particular program, and I'm obsessed with it.
I think it should be called a starfish lunge.
A starfish lunge. I like
that. Doesn't
he look
like
a
Patrick Star, kind of, when he does it? I don't know.
I don't know. I really have been wanting to try it, but I feel like they're going to have to peel me off the ice. So we'll see if I ever feel brave enough. Kaori kind of, we're going to get to her, but she kind of has the same move in one of her programs.
Yeah.
Which is to say that Benoit was like, you know what? Everyone's doing this now. It's cool. People like it. It's less of a chance of breaking your neck.
Let's go. Here's my thing about the Creation of Adam costume.
Mm-hmm.
So he had the little reveal where he pulled it down and then the fingers were there.
Mm-hmm.
Which, okay, my eyesight is not great. So I thought from the moment he did that till the very, very end of the program when he slowed down enough for me to see the shirt, I thought what it was like blood smears on his ribs. And I was like, that goes so fucking hard. Like, he's Adam. He like fucking, like Eve was created out of his rib. That fucking whips ass. That's so metal. I love that. And then when they showed that it was just like two fucking fingers, I was disappointed. And I was like, that's so on the nose.
I can't possibly comment on that, Megan. There's nothing I can say about it just being two fingers on this podcast that my mother listens to.
Then we shall imagine in our heads.
One must imagine.
The disappointment of it just being two fingers is something that many people can feel. Wouldn't that have been cool if it was like some like blood, like some like really like tasteful, like dark maroon blood?
Here's the thing. Yes. But also no, because we have seen, we're getting into like biblical, right? I mean, we are in biblical, but we're getting into like more, we have had stigmata gloves and shit like that in the past. And I don't know if I care to see that again.
But if we're doing a reveal, I have not seen a reveal before where it's a like a ribs detail.
God, imagine reveal. If you were like, I have not seen a reveal.
You would be gagged all the way to Angers, like, and back. But the reveal where you just pull down a ruche and there's, like, a new detail under there on your ribs and you're doing Adam, like, that's so obvious to me to do that. But whatever. Yeah. Whenever. I thought that the pants were cool in the Free Skate 2. Like, I liked them better than the pants in the original because I'm like, it sucks that the nude pants look like jeans. I don't think it would be better if they looked less like jeans. It's concerned.
Well, obviously, like, everything about the nude illusion costume is bad and we all hate it. It concerns me how pink parts of it are, because if the idea of it is to look as nude as possible, I thought about it a little too hard recently and it gave me a headache how pink certain portions of it are. Also, and I did say that earlier this week, but I will repeat it the other day and skip like 20 seconds ahead if you're squeamish. The other day I was late for skate practice and I was really in a rush taking the soft guards off and putting the hard guards on my skates. And I bumped my thigh with the very back end of my blade. So not like the sharp part, but just like the dull short end of the back of the blade. And it didn't rip my tights or anything, but then I got home and there was a bruise with just like a bloodied nick in the center. And I am not exaggerating. It is the exact same color scheme, like the exact same ombre as that costume. Or it was 2 days ago when I watched it, you know, bruises change. But I don't know how I feel about that. And I think how I feel about it is that I hate it.
What it means is that Adam Xiaoyanfa has put such a stamp on a weird dramatic skating injury that now all skating injuries are in his branding.
Yeah, apparently so. But anyway, yeah, what else do we say about Adam at this point?
I love the commitment, continued commitment to a package of programs that are continuous under the same umbrella. I love he ends by the wall at the short program, then he starts by the wall in the free. I love that. I think that the, like, Vitruvian Man references in the short go really hard. I don't know. I want to see it again. I'm going to say that again and again today because I think the first impression or one of the first impressions of the skate for me is always just going to be like a vibe slapping me in the face more so than individual elements. And that'll come as the season goes on.
You can't like expect, you know, the part where he reaches his hand out when it's the first time you've seen the part. That's going to come as the season progresses, as we're going to get, you know, fond of and used to particular bits of each of those programs. Ilya Malinin won. Wow.
Shocker.
No one's ever expected it. I've been on such a journey. I tried so hard to get on board because I saw where things were heading fucking seasons ago. And I tried very hard to be completely on board. And then a voice happened, right?
Yeah, no, I'm here. I'm still here. I just am. I'm speechless, unlike Ilya Malinin.
Several things. One, I will never vibe with his whole thing, apparently. I'm gonna keep trying. I go in every time really, really wanting to get on board. Like, I'll be so happy if by the Olympics that he's gonna win. we're gonna, I'm like completely won over and I'm happy and all of that. Like, I want that so badly. As of right now, Shailen Bourne is an incredible choreographer, and that goes for both of his programs. I have nothing very particular to say about his short as of right now. And the free is batshit.
Yeah, so I think that we are going to need to dig into the free a little bit, because the thing about Ilya that he has let us know, and not us, but, you know, the world, is that he's a serious artist. He's an avant-garde artist. He's doing performance art. And if you don't get
it. And you and I respect him.
And if you don't like it, then you don't get it. And if there's one thing that Netta and I know how to do, it's give a formal critique to experimental art. And so we will be doing that if that's what he wants. But before we start, I just want to say that I, too, was trying my absolute hardest to be, like, an Ilya stan. You know what lost me? Because I think, for me, my new rule in with skaters in general, and this has always sort of been my rule, but I'm trying to, like, really stick to it this year. I think there's a lot of gossip and speculation and just, like, overall meanness that happens in the skating fandom around, like, people's opinions of skaters as people. And I think my general rule that I'm going to try to stick to is I'm going to judge skaters based on things that came out of their mouths or that they themselves wrote or tweeted. If they were to retweet something that was explicitly horrible, then I would say, yeah. But I'm not going to judge people based on who they are seen with or who they follow or who they have followed or who, you know what I mean?
Like, that's back too many. In 2008, he liked a tweet by someone who retweeted the great grandma of my aunt's far right cousin. Like,
that's too many degrees separate, considering the amount of, like, 0 degree proximity we have seen in this community. So,
and
I just
did
don't
we
really
not
care.
Do we not know that everyone in this sport, once again, I'll bring it up for the second time in this episode, everyone in this sport is quite woke and extremely left leaning.
Clearly,
every single one of us.
I was kind of thinking, like, look, a lot of what I don't like about Ilya is, like, a vibe or a projected narrative or assumptions or speculations. And that's not fair. I don't know him.
Yeah.
And I still don't know him. I don't know what's in his heart. But you know what actually kind of, like, turned me off? Not for good, but for, you know, well and truly, like, decisively. Was U.S. Figure Skating did a little featurette, like, a month or so ago, maybe. And they asked everybody who on the team has a talent that they would steal if they magically could or, like, borrow.
Yeah.
And his response was, nobody, I like my own talents. And that really turned me off, to be honest with you, because it's an incredibly talented team. I mean, I'm sorry, but if I'm Ilya Malinin and I don't say Jason Brown.
No, I feel like that's the kind of thing where, like, the whole point of those, like, feel good, you know, little featurettes is to show team spirit and to show, oh, they're all buds, that
and
whole thing.
Not to be wicked cynical, but, like, the easiest fucking gimme in the world, Max Naumov's courage. Like, hello? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, just say something nice and neutral.
Say,
know what I mean?
Like, he's friends with Amber. Say, like, fucking Amber's whatever, party spirit. Like,
Amber's gayness. I don't know.
No, oh my god, he hasn't gone in, he hasn't done enough diversity training for that yet, I don't think.
No, I okay, so that turned me off because whatever. I don't know the context of that. I don't know what was edited around. I don't know how the question was posed to him. I'm like, whatever. Okay, but it cemented for me like a certain self-absorbedness that I think was
I think it's really important for a young athlete, right, to really fucking believe in themselves. I do. I genuinely do. Because I train with so many teeny tiny kids, and there's so many of them, and so many of them are good, that I feel like at some point you have to protect your own peace by being like, you know what, I actually am the greatest person to ever walk the earth and the ice, and I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread, and no one can ever fucking compare. Because if you're not, if you can't love yourself, how in the hell are you going to love somebody else, etc.? I don't think RuPaul meant that, but I understand where it's coming from. I get it. I feel like it's kind of the same in, like, theater and, like, everything else we do. At some point, you have to, like, buy your own shit because no one else will if you don't. 100%.
I mean, I walk the earth thinking thoughts about myself that are so egotistical that if everybody knew, I would just immediately be shunned.
Oh, my God. Yeah, same. But at the same time, there has to be a balance and a humility that comes with it so that you can then get everyone else on board with that self-belief that you have in yourself. It's a really weird thing to like thread, right? Because I don't think young athletes and young performers should be humbled or anything like that. I do think they should be completely 100% proud of themselves and like self-assured and like head held high, all of that. But at the same time, there has to be something. And please say something because I'm leading up to somewhere, but like, let me not interrupt you.
Well, I just wanted to say that I think the coolest thing you can do as somebody who is clearly the best XYZ at XYZ, right? Maybe you're like the best dancer in your studio or like the best basketball player on your team. Like whenever you're the best X at Y, the absolute coolest thing you can do when you are already universally recognized as such is to shout out somebody else on the team or who is doing something that you feel you can learn from. Like that to me, it's not just good sportsmanship, it's cool as shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there are ways you can behave when you're at the top that give off a sense of like bonus points because it's just fucking cool. And I think it would have been so cool for him to find, you know. But
I mean, again, we're judging off of like an edited thing, you know. So like,
yeah, and recently in a similar thing, they asked who's the Olympic goat, and he had a lot of nice things to say about Yuzi Rohanyu.
He did call him almost perfect, though.
Right, and
not
I was
be,
like,
not to be a fan out here because Lord knows I've been doxxed by certain people.
But yeah, to be clear, I do agree with Ilya on everything he said about Yuzu, but I know from experience that will get you in the crosshairs.
That will get you in the crosshairs, and also I feel like there is a hint there of like, well, what I'm doing is like clearly, you know, the next step, which I don't know if I respect it. I understand it. I don't know. It's complicated. I have a complicated time with him, I guess, is what I'm saying. And then we go into what you said. He is an avant-garde artist. He is a performance artist. He is a spoken word poet. And all of those are things that we are profoundly trained to criticize, to critique, to unpack, to understand. And
for once, a skater came into our house. It only took 6 years.
I am so thrilled and I'm so happy to welcome him, and please can he can grab like a drink from the fridge and hang out with us. Here's the thing. And if you're one of like three people in the world who can connect dots, that's fine. The sales story that you told a little while back comes back into play here with me because, and I'm again maintaining anonymities for everyone and everyone that we've ever mentioned. There is something so indicative of a young male performance artist. The ice aside. Okay, let's pretend that Ilya does the exact same voiceover, the exact same music cut, but he is doing like movement in a black box, which would be my house. That's where I live.
Yeah, his technical skills on ice are kind of unimpeachable, and I don't think so. We're going to take that and put it aside.
We're not going to talk about that. What he does, and I desperately wish that I had thought to like write down all of the words that he says. I didn't think that far in advance, but it gives you realize over your lunch break that you have to show your experimental theater professor something in about 20 minutes. So you open your notes on your note app and you're like, that sounds like something. And you just read it out.
Yeah, it's something you already, and it would be something that you wrote in your notes app at like 4 a.m. when you woke up in the middle of the night for water. And you're like, oh, because that's what you do when you're in art school. You just sort of write down random shit because you think everything's important, maybe.
I'm trying to find one right now to read to you. I'm not reading him.
We know this from experience.
I see him. I know that shit because I've done it. I've pulled out a 5-year-old Tumblr post to read as if it's like an etude that I wrote for a class because I was busy, you know, sketching sketches for costume design and I didn't have time to be deep and profound. And I recognize it, but that's a first draft. That's a first draft. And then it has to go somewhere. And the somewhere you go with it is usually not the Olympics.
Yeah, can I say, this was the specific thing that came for me based on a school experience, yes, but an earlier one that we actually don't share. I grew up going to Quaker school from grades 6 through 12. And shout out to anybody in our listening audience who is Quaker and or went to Quaker school. Anybody who's ever been to a Quaker meeting for worship. I went to a meeting for worship at least once a week for, what, 7 years? And so I've been to a lot of them. And if you are unfamiliar, a Quaker meeting for worship is it's like church-ish, but like it's in a very plain building because Quakers are all about like simplicity. Actually, Netta, you know this because I think the very first time we worked together, we did something based on Quaker meeting, right?
I was about to say that it was like 5 days after I met you that I did not know what a Quaker is.
Yeah. So anyway, it's one of the tenets is the simplicity. So and one of the other ones is silence. And so you sit kind of facing the center, like in the round, and you sit in silence. And then when you feel that the spirit has moved you to say something profound, you can stand and share it with people. And that's what they have instead of like one person who's like, I'm the priest, I'm the most important. Like it's very like egalitarian and like everybody can say something if they feel moved. And it's kind of wonderful. But doing it in a school, ask anyone who's gone to a Quaker school, it's a very different experience than like a real Quaker meeting because you have a lot of asshole kids who don't know what is appropriate or what's even profound. They're just trying some shit out, and that's fine. We've all said amazingly dumb things at a Quaker meeting. If you went to Quaker school, we've all said some dumb shit at a Quaker meeting, okay? But it was giving 8th grader boys who discovered that if they said something that sounded kind of fake deep, they could get away with fucking anything.
Yep.
And I specifically remember a Quaker meeting where 2 8th grade boys who were friends, and they clearly coordinated this, one of them stood up and said, is a turtle with no shell naked or homeless? And then sat back down. And then the second one stood up and said, we have not had a chicken patty day in the cafeteria in weeks. And I think that that's not right. And then sat down. It was like, that was so clearly for me what it was.
See, I've never been to a Quaker meeting, but I did take poetry classes in high school. And it's functionally just the same thing in terms of you realize at one point that if you take the right breaks in the things that you're saying and you take a certain tone, you could say absolutely fucking anything. And one person out there will be like, you know what? That's my voice. And I know that I'm nothing and that's something, or whatever the fuck he said. You know, it's that.
And there's validity to that. I think there's a place in everyone's education where they get to be really heavy handed or go really over the top with the thing they just discovered. I think that's like a huge part of it. And I actually genuinely support it. But
yes. But again, it's a draft and you don't go to the Olympics with it.
Yeah. So here's my actual critique is not of Ilya in this case. Mm-hmm. It's of, I guess, Shaylin and her husband.
Yeah. Her husband, who I don't know what he is.
He's like a cinematographer, filmmaker, yeah. Mrs. Shaylin, I mean, Mr. Shaylin, Mr. Bourne, the Bourne Identity, the Bourne Ultimatum. Anyway, this is my real critique is not with Ilya, because as far as I can tell, this does not seem like it was his idea. And I don't think
he would be down to do something he doesn't want to do, though.
He wouldn't do it if he didn't want to do it. But I
see what you want to do is not necessarily what you're going to do.
No, I think it seems to me that he didn't come up with this idea, that it was an idea that was pitched to him. And he said yes, obviously, because you don't have to do anything you don't want to do if you're Ilya Malinin, clearly. But I think that too early on in his career, it got self-referential and kind of became this like Ouroboros eating its own tail situation where his skating is only about his skating. And I think that can happen really late in your career or post-retirement. But I think you need to have so much more material under your belt to get to that status. And I feel like he came out the gate with it. And so the theme of all of his programs for the last like 3 years or so has just been him. And I think this is the most egregious instance of that. And I almost think it's uncharitable to him, because
we're not seeing him tell other stories. We're not seeing him like be at the disco, be at the, I don't know,
a table, be an ice cream.
Yeah, we're not seeing him be like, we're not seeing Ilya at the disco and at the waltz like ball. we're just seeing the Quad God character, the persona, the avatar, do the things that the avatar does.
Yeah, it's like the whole, his whole, all of his skates are just like a big like ring walk out for a boxing match. And it's
There it is. That's it.
And I think as whatever, I'm also, if you're not familiar with me and my work and my day job, I'm a voice teacher and a piano teacher. And so I have experience being in a position of like working on a craft with young people in a one-on-one setting. And so I sometimes sort of extrapolate from that and think, okay, well, what might coaching this person be like, or what might that be like? And like, I don't fucking know, but like, I do have more experience in that dynamic than most people, I guess. So I feel somewhat qualified to say that there is a certain attitude among like educators where you think, okay, like you want to expose them to all the greats and the classics and make sure they have like a really well-rounded foundation, but also you want to keep them engaged. And the way you keep somebody engaged is by hitting on the thing that they like. If they're really into Sonic the Hedgehog, then like you also let them play the Green Hill Zone music, you know? And like you not let them, because it's like it's fucking slaps and it's like a great song and, you know, you find the stuff in there. What it feels like to me is that the thing that they have hit upon in Ilya's life that they're like, oh, this will keep him engaged, this will keep his interest, is him. And I'm like, what a damning thing to think about someone.
Yeah,
like I know that I'm kind of reading too far into it, but
no, that's brutal.
I don't know. I would be offended if everybody kind of around me kind of like thought my brand was just me caring about me, whether or not that's true.
Yeah,
it's not. And I don't know what's in his heart, and I never will. And I'm sure he's not a bad person. I'm sure he's a wonderful person, because I think it takes a lot of character to do what he does in general. And it must be really difficult, genuinely, to be in a position where people are saying you are, quote unquote, literally superhuman on television. So I do think that those thoughts that are coming from him, that we're laughing and we're like, oh, that's fake deep, whatever. I think that that's coming from a real place. And I actually think that his feelings must be really profound on that on some level. But I think that the people around him didn't do a good enough job. Like, let's just start from, I don't know, like maybe have like a professional actor read them or something. You know what I mean? Just setting him up for like not being ridiculed.
Yeah. I don't know. There's something about it that just, I agree with everything you're saying. And again, like, I genuinely deeply respect the absolute fucking balls it takes to do what he's doing. Because one of the things that is a through line in our conversations has been about how so many younger, especially male performers, are so afraid of being earnest and of, you know, showing that they have thoughts and emotions and all of that, which is, you know, a whole other thing that we've talked about so many times. So I very deeply respect his guts in being like, this is what's coming from me right now. I respect it. But at the same time, literally the fact that it feels like it was a voice memo on an iPhone that was slapped onto some music makes it feel unserious in a way where, if I were to give it the most generous possible read, if he were a peer who, you know, shows up to our black box and shows me some movement piece with this, I'd be like, that's an awesome draft. When are you going to get into the studio and like record it properly? Are you getting a voice actor? What's the next step?
I know. Okay, so I know that we've been really going really hard on this, and I think I don't ever want to
come
like
off. I feel like part of why I'm going so far, so hard on this. I don't know about you. I mean, I've known you for a long time, but I don't know you like that. I want it to work so badly.
The thing for me that makes this podcast fun and has kind of made us want to do it, and has made like theater school a fun thing for us to do, and just talking about art, is that one of my biggest fascinations in life, I said fascinations, one of my biggest fascinations in life is like when it comes to any kind of art or any kind of, dare I say, media, I always want to know like why, like choices were made.
We all make choices. That was a choice.
Exactly. And I want to know, why did that choice work or why did it not work? Why was it made? What was being attempted? And did it succeed? And that was always like, if I'm watching a scary movie and I'm scared, I'm like, what about that was scary and why? Did it like trigger some kind of primordial thing with me, or did it, you know, that's just how I approach everything. And that's like the most interesting thing in the world.
This is literally the reason we're here in this metaphorical spatial room right now.
Right.
Is because I, especially as a more As a younger theater maker, I had very visceral, very negative reactions to a lot of experimental theater. I didn't like a lot of it, and I thought a lot of it is pretentious bullshit. And, yeah, you know, the fake deep shit that you pull out of your notes app and all of that. And it irked me to a point that I went and got a master's degree about it. And now I understand, and I can verbalize what works and what doesn't in a certain piece. But it's always been that. It's always been the, like, oh, why is this? How is this theatrical? Why does this work?
I don't want it to come off as though a really, really, like, granular, long-ass, rambling exploration of a skater's thing that didn't work for me. I don't want that to come off as unnecessarily mean or like I'm going harder at the critique or meaner at the critique. That's actually me doing my most nice, like, objective, like, let me give you the benefit of the doubt and just look at this purely from the way I was trained to look at it. And so if I'm spending more time speaking about something that Ilya did that I don't like, I'm actually just trying to really get to the bottom of it. But yeah. I think you're right. If I was giving him critique, I would say, yeah, I think that we could take another pass at the recording. I will say, as a sound person, I thought that it was a good mix. Like, I thought that they used a nice microphone. They put a nice amount of reverb on it. It sounded a little bit – it was jarring, the contrast between the blasé delivery and the epic movie trailer effects on it, which I would say if we were at an experimental theater school, I'd say lean into that, see how far you can push that distance.
In a world.
Yeah, like, in a world. But – I would say the writing for me is the thing. I would say, you know, I like the direction of this, but I think you can go further into, like, something that's personal for you, something that, like, have something to say. I was just kind of repeatedly yelling at the screen, what does that mean? That doesn't mean anything. Like, say something that means something or, like, or has a point of view. What is this program saying? I actually genuinely don't know. And maybe he's right. Maybe I just don't get it. I don't know.
Maybe we don't get it. I don't know.
Maybe we just don't get it.
Maybe all of this was bullshit. I will say, again, to kind of wrap this up, because we gotta move on to women, because my God, we're rambly today. We're just excited to be back. This
happens every time. We haven't talked about skating in forever, and I'm personally fine releasing a long episode. I don't think people are gonna be mad.
The only thing I will say to kind of wrap this up is, I mean, he's not gonna listen, and I doubt any of his, like, big stans who, you know, take everything he does as gospel will listen and will have gotten to this point. It is a compliment from us, from where we come from where we live, that we spent 20 minutes picking at it. Because if it had just sucked, I would have just been like, I don't fucking want to talk about it.
Yeah, because we could have talked about it the way we talked about Nika Agassi. This is what I want to say, though. I think I also want to be really clear. I know that I don't ever want to come off as being biased against anybody. And I want to be – I was thinking to myself, is there anyone who –
which is weird because we are human beings. Like, you're always going to have inherent biases.
Yeah. I mean, I think being biased is fine, to be perfectly honest with you. Yeah. Like, I think that we're all going to have biases, and that's the reason
No one's paying us to be here. Sports is the kind of thing where you have favorites and you dislike some people, and sometimes it's simply vibes.
I want to say I really asked myself, is there anybody on planet fucking Earth or in the whole universe that could make this program work? And I do not believe there is. I'm trying to think of people that I think can almost do no wrong. Like, I'll just say, like, Kari Sakamoto or, like, Amber Glenn. Like, somebody that I just really unequivocally love.
Wait, are we saying, like, someone who has to take this exact thing and just do it and it makes sense? Or are we saying we give everyone the assignment, go to your voice memo app, do a poem, let's perform it?
I think my parameters are the skater themselves will read the lines, but the words will remain the same.
Oh, and that's fun.
I don't like it for anyone. And I have to say, like, I genuinely think if it was, like, let's say it was Kari Sakamoto, who's, like, I just, you know, she's my fave, I would be like, this is the most disappointing final season I have ever had for a favorite skater, and I am devastated. Like, that's what I would say. And I would go a step further and say, I don't know the creative writing abilities of every internationally competitive skater, but I really doubt that there is very much anybody could do that would make me feel like their original words would be good. If you're gonna record your voice, I want you to be Star Andrews and I want you to be singing, and that's it.
Yeah, there it is. Let's talk about women.
Let's do it. Speaking of women.
Speaking of women.
Oh, wait. Can I say one thing that's nice just to cap it off? Yeah. I actually like Ilya's short program. I like the costume. I think it's like a fun vibe. I like it. And I love the free skate costume. And like, I think what I said was like, I don't really vibe with this program, but the costume is Cunterella. Like, it's really good.
I really like the bolero. I really like the little bolero.
And the little halter with it. Like, it's daring. I like
it.
It's
really pretty. It's really pretty. I'm still not sold on like the ruching on the pants. But I will get there, and it's probably my favorite of his costumes. And that's something, again, the grandiosity of the costume and the music would be even better if we had leaned into it with the VO, if we're going to do the VO as well. But it's good. It's fun, and, like, the movement, and it looks nice.
We have so much time to talk about that this season, so let's get into the women. Third place with a bronze medal is Rion Sumiyoshi, is that right?
Yes, it is.
All right, so yes, first off, right off the bat, here's something I want to say. I have gone really hard on Twitter to criticize, like, commentators on their mispronunciation of Japanese names. And part of that is, like, I feel like that, like, white guy in a fucking kimono meme where it's like, who am I to say this? I think that to double down on my insistence that we say names that I know how to pronounce correctly. I'm going to go out of my way this season to really learn how to say everybody's name exactly correctly.
Hell yeah.
Because it was also pointed out to me that I don't technically say Kaori Sakamoto right either, because, like, I don't go out of my way to be like Kaori. You know what I mean? Like, I say, like, Kaori. And, like,
see, here's the thing. I really want to be very, very good. I can't roll my R's. Like, I have a speech impediment. So the
criticize Netta because that's ableist. And then I'm going to cancel you. But you can come for me. I can roll my R's just fine. So anyway, Rion Sumiyoshi, what do we think?
I struggle with Rion. She hasn't done anything to me. She's a wonderful skater. She's really, really, her lines are beautiful. She's obviously fantastic. She has a quad. Like, everything's awesome. It's one of those cases where I have nothing to truly say as criticism. It's just not for me, I don't think. Also, I'm sad that she didn't change the free skate, because I was kind of over it last season and now it's back. And I don't know, I struggle with that free a little bit, and I don't know why, and I don't want to be a hater. I promise I have good things to say about people. But it's one of those cases of just, like, I understand why she's so many people's favorite. I get it. I see it. Like, I'm with you. I enjoy watching her skate. But I don't think she's one of the skaters where I'd be like, oh, I'm bored. Let me pop on some programs. I don't think I'll reach for her body of work.
She suffers from boring program syndrome to me personally. But the thing I need to address before I get into her skating is that her style of costume is fucking wild to me. And it is not my style at all, but it is very distinctive. And I will say that. And I love color. So, like, you do you, girl. The short program dress was not for me. I thought it looked like a birthday cake. I just wasn't. And I love cake. And my cat's name is Cake. It's, like, my favorite food. But just as a dress, I don't know, it wasn't doing it for me. And I never really liked the free skate dress. It was a little bit too much. But, you know, whatever. If it makes her feel good, it makes her feel good. I liked this free skate this time so much more than I did at any point last season.
Okay. That's good.
I really appreciate it. And maybe it was just where in the skate order she fell, perhaps, which is not a dig to those around her, because I honestly can't remember who they were at this point. But it felt, when she went out at that moment and skated that, it felt so refreshing to me that she clearly learned every single beat of choreography and where it was supposed to go in the music and did every single one.
Yeah.
Instead of just skating jump to jump with some flailing, which a lot of people do. And, like, even really good people that we like, you can tell they didn't internalize every single thing that the choreographer told them. Yeah. They forgot some of it. And I get it. But I just was, like, really struck by the way that she was clearly being so faithful to the choreography in a way that just, like, got me really excited about it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And honestly, that's a very great argument for, like, sticking with a program. I know there's been a lot of, like, chatter back and forth about whether we like it or not when people do that. Honestly, that gets me on board a little bit more. Like, that's something that I will now watch for as she undoubtedly progresses through her season and continues to deliver. We're not even gonna talk about Japanese nationals because that's gonna be a whole thing. We're not gonna touch that right now, but that's something that I'll now be excited to look for, is her digging ever deeper into the intricacies of, especially her free that she's now had for a season and change.
Yeah, and I was thinking about repeats this season in particular, not just as, like, I try not to be critical of repeats because I think in a lot of cases it's a budget thing and I can't, you know, and then, and I'm not saying that about any individual person, but I know in some cases it's a budget thing because it costs money to hire a choreographer and a music editor and, you know, a costume
and
designer
for your new dress.
And the dress
is like fucking thousands of dollars.
Yeah, so like, it's like, if you're not getting the funding, you know, again, no idea who that applies to, but whatever. The other piece of it is that I think strategically it's seen, okay, it's maybe seen as kind of lazy sometimes. It's like the stigma of like, I'm not going to challenge myself. And like, I think sometimes, yeah, sure, but when I'm forming an opinion about a repeat program, I like to look at the field they're in and who they're competing with for spots. And if that field is really, really volatile and chaotic and goes all sorts of ways and could go any sorts of ways depending on where the
it
wind blows.
It could be smart.
It's smart. Like, I was thinking of that actually with Luke Economide, who, Economides, Mr. Economy.
Mr. Economy!
If you look at him, his big competitors are Adam and Kevin, who are chaotic kings at the best of times, and we never know where they're going to place. And like Francois Pitot.
But also when they're good, they're scary.
Right. And been very good, but is newer. And I'm like, if I'm kind of the reserve by default, then I want to make sure I'm fucking solid so I'm ready. Yep.
Yeah. That's clever.
And
I
in a deep
that.
Field, like the women's Japanese field, I don't know if that was part of the strategy. Maybe it wasn't, but it does make sense to me when there's like 4, 5, 6 women who could all take that second or third spot for the Olympics, you know, why not go in as like a really solid, confident skater?
Yeah. Do you want to talk about our shared wife, Kaori Sakamoto?
Of course.
Say it the right way, please, for me.
Okay, so Kaori Sakamoto.
Beautiful. In Bulgarian, we'd say Kaori Sakamoto. So, you know, you win some, you lose some. We all know it's her final season. She has officially said that. The countdown is, assuming she does everything and ends up going to Worlds as well after the Olympics and all that. We get to see her, what, like 6 or 7 more times on competitive ice?
Less.
So that's something to consider. I'm not going to go into it. I'm not going to get into detail this time around because I feel like by the end of the season, I will have unpacked every single millisecond.
Yeah, we'll be corn plating the shit out of this.
I will be corn plating is not even corn plating is deep analysis compared to what I'm going to be doing. I will say what I think I mentioned in the off season where we're talking about like predictions and all of that. This is such an insane package. It's so perfect for what it is. It's so perfect for what it does. And I mean, yes, it's kind of on the nose and blah, 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 blah. People will be kind of pissed about the Andrea Bocelli, Sarah Brightman of it all. I personally think that with her legacy and with the way that her career has gone, you get to have the 11 o'clock number. Like, those are the programs. This is how you go out. And at the same time, they feel personal. And at the same time, they're so fucking Olympic ice worthy.
I honestly would go so far as to say that I don't really care how good or bad or long your career was. If you're retiring, you get to have corny songs of your last season if you want. Like, I think that's fine. I'm always fine with that.
What would you skate to if you were to retire and it was your last one?
What's a good goodbye song? Like Pikachu's Goodbye? No, I would skate to the Spice Girls. Isn't there a song called Goodbye? The one where like, na, 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 na. That'd be nice.
I would be skating. I see, I asked just so I could answer. I would be skating to Good Riddance by Green Day.
Wait, can I change my answer? I would skate to Good Riddance from Hades. I've been playing Hades again.
Oh my God, that's great.
The Edith Piaf is so good to me. I like him à l'amour is one of my favorite songs ever. And I thought it was really remarkable that when it was, we had two of those in this event. We had it was Lea Serna, right, who did the other one?
I think so.
And I thought it was interesting because her version of it, to me, that read as like singing about a lover, like a romantic love. And Kaori's read so much about like a love letter to the audience. And it's, I just thought it was interesting how
context and a different skater can change a song to be so clearly about something else. That was fascinating to me.
Side note, I just opened it up. Do you know that Lea Serna's free skate was choreographed by Kevin Amos?
I love that. That's awesome. Pretty cool. That makes sense to me. I thought it was really good.
Yeah. I really enjoy like the exchange of skill within a team. I think that's very cool.
Yeah. Anyway, Kaori, you can do no wrong to me. You're beautiful and perfect. I love your packaging.
Frankly, and we'll get into it. I feel like she should have won.
Yeah.
I feel like she should have won. I feel like some choices were made. And I feel like I saw a lot of talk about like, oh, she's passing the torch. And like, oh, this is like the beginning of the end. And I'm like, She didn't make the scores. She skated fucking lights out. And it's, I have opinions. I'm not going to get into them because I've been so negative this episode to begin with. And I promise I'm a nice, fun person. Oh my God, I remembered what else I had to tell you. Have I told you about my plushy pigeon that I had as a child?
Maybe, but tell me again. I'm not sure I remember the specifics.
I'm looking at Kaori's programs, right? And her versions of the medley is the Patricia Kaas singing, right? Mind you, when I was like 5 years old, I had no idea who Patricia Kaas was. She is a French singer, obviously. But I remember distinctly that someone, I think a friend of my parents, had gifted me this plushy pigeon, and it was like, I think it was white or off-white, and the inside of its little wings were like a little floral fabric, you know how the jelly cat bunnies are like a little floral. And I asked my dad what to name this pigeon, and he said Patricia, and I said why, and he said after Patricia Kaas. So this is how I learned that this singer exists, was via naming a plushie, which I feel like comes really full circle in my life, if you think about it.
It does, and would be such a good transition to Plushie Corner if Kaori had won, but I think we're used to her being the last one we talk about. But no, let's talk about Amina Kai, which that was the thing that was making me feel fucking insane, was that they kept calling her Amy, and I'm like, Ami, A-M-I, Ami. That is the French word everyone knows, and therefore I know French people know how to pronounce it. Why are you doing so much?
They might have, like, panicked. They see it, they're like, surely it's not what I think it is.
It can't be that. No, but I really loved it, and I thought it was cute. And I don't know. I didn't notice she did a triple axel, to be honest with you. Like, I'm not that good at looking at a jump and noticing whether it was a quad or a triple. Like, I'm just going to come out and say that in our sixth year of doing this.
You're so brave.
Thank you for saying that, for spilling.
If anyone's counting, that's 4 outdated drag race references that have made this episode. And I don't know why. It's just where I'm at today emotionally.
Yeah. Well, so, okay. The Lestrada program. Honestly, like, if you go out there and you have impeccable skating skills and you smile the whole time and go out there with like this really nice, like, I'm in character, I love skating, like, you're gonna win me over probably if it feels genuine. And to me, it kind of did. It didn't feel like fake toddlers and tiaras smiling. Like, it felt real to me. And I liked it a lot, and I had so much fun. And the entire time I was like, this is so cute and so fun. And I wasn't paying attention to the individual elements or whatever, or the points or how they stacked up. So I really can't comment on whether I thought those points should have been a bigger number than Kaori's. Like, I don't know. It was very, like, vibes only, and I thought they were cute. She's kind of giving that, like, Marine Honda, sunshine, beautiful, like, happy embodiment of the goddess of cuteness and happiness in both of her programs. So maybe in the future, I'm curious to see if there's some range. But for an opening senior season, I think that's, you know, bang on. It's perfect. And she herself said, you know, I didn't expect to win. I hope this doesn't put a weird pressure on the rest of my season. And that's my wish for her. Because I think it was just great.
I respect that. I'm happy that you and 99.9% of the people in the world had fun with this. It's just, I will agree with you. I think she made such a banger of a statement entering her senior career, winning her very first Grand Prix. She is very charming. She is very sweet and cute. I will need to see this package again because Okay, the Lestrada is fine. I wasn't in the mood for, like, the cuteness of it as I was watching it just because of other things in my life. So I genuinely do not think I can comment on it and be fair. I will tell you right now, I will never like this free skate. I will never like this free skate because I have a very particular collection of songs that I deeply, deeply struggle with. And we've talked about them on this podcast. And unfortunately, What a Wonderful World is one of them. It will never feel genuine to me. Like, literally, you could be my five-year-old daughter. I don't have a five-year-old daughter, but like, you could be like my five-year-old daughter who I've born, and you could be singing that song at me on my birthday because you love me, and I'd still be like, this song insists upon itself in a way that I find grating. And that's just the weird sparkles in my weird neurodivergent brain, and I literally can't do anything about it. And the fact that it's like a Bananas and Avocados cover with the piano guys makes it worse for me. And yeah, bad that's cover. Literally no one's fault. It's literally no one's fault. I'm just never going to be able to like not feel like I've survived a war when those 4 minutes are over, unfortunately. That's an insensitive thing to say. There's many terrible things happening in the world and I shouldn't say that. But it's just that I struggle with it in my brain.
Yeah, I don't always need, like, an ooh-ooh cutesy-voiced girl to be singing with an ooh-ooh cutesy-voiced skater. Like, to me, that's a little bit hat on a hat. But yeah. I like the song. I have positive memories associated with it that are just, like, personal to me. So that's, like, the other side of that is, like, that's why I like it and it doesn't bother me. But I think I will say that I think if you're going to cover it, I think it needs to be understated because it's a very on-the-nose song lyrically. And I think it speaks for itself. And if you go really hard into the vocalistness of it, it definitely starts insisting upon itself, which I think is true of this cover. But that's just sort of my two cents with it. I agree, though. It's like very, I mean, this was the program that she was going to have be Cinderella, but then Disney wouldn't let her have the rights. And so she had to do something else. And it reminded me a lot of like, I don't think you've seen the rehearsal, but if anybody in the audience has seen the rehearsal, there's this elaborate bit where Nathan Fielder stages a fake reality singing competition where the only songs allowed to be played are public domain. And so it's these people going fucking crazy on like, she'll be coming around the mountain. And like, that's what it was giving to me. And it was, so that kind of made me laugh.
You know what it is when a show like network sitcoms go on streaming and they clearly couldn't get the rights for whatever needle drop was on the original.
Yeah. And to that point, before we transition into talking about plushies, I want to point out that earlier this year, there was a thing where if you went on YouTube and you tried to watch like a random Challenger Series event, it would replace the music with random AI bullshit that it like thought maybe was in the same genre or went with it. Maybe.
We've never said this on the pod. Just real quick. Fuck AI. AI is bad for the environment. It's bad for your brain. It's stupid. And if you use it, I think less of you.
Correct.
I just needed to get that out there.
I have recorded this whole podcast on a laptop with a sticker on it that says using AI is loser behavior.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so I agreed. That was really infuriating, but it kind of did create for me a new litmus test, which is, for me, watching little bits of that and trying to figure out whose music was replaced and whose wasn't gave me this thing in my head that was like, one measure of a skater being good to me is that I can tell that wasn't their original music. When you can't tell and it could be anything, that's pretty damning. And so that I'm not saying that about Amina Kai. I'm saying that her music copyright struggles reminded me of that. So that's something else I want to keep in mind this season is like, could it have been stupid AI bullshit? And how long would it have taken you to notice?
Wow, I love that. And good luck to everyone who's playing along with all of the epic movie trailer.mp3 music. Before we move on to plushies, just a little side note, because I'm not enough of a hater today, apparently. I'm not going to say absolutely anything because we only cover singles, men and women, on this podcast. The only thing I will say is, y'all were fucking lucky we don't talk about Ice Dance, because my God, do I ever have opinions. And I have said things on my private locked Twitter that if those things got out, everyone would know that I'm an extremely mean-spirited woman. I'm joking, of course. I hope I'm not mean-spirited, but my God, Ice Dance, am I right? I'm at Netta Marie on the internet, and talk to me about it, because I need to cope. We're in the trenches.
Let me take you out of the trenches and into the corner.
Yes,
the
please.
Corner.
Yes.
Okay. So I thought this was actually overall a really fantastic event. A lot of variety, a lot of excitement. Here's what we got.
And this is going to be a real test on my ability to pronounce names. So for those of you who are listening, can you actually like correct me? Like, I know that I in general hate feedback from listeners. Correct me if you like are like if you're a Korean speaker, can you tell me how I'm supposed to say Yongnyu? Like, am I saying it okay? Can you fix it for me? Thank you. Okay.
Open up your voice memo app.
Literally, like give send us a me poem. Like, I wanna know. So like if listeners, please tell me like what I can do better for this. Like,
I really hope that for the Olympics they do the thing that they did for the Summer Olympics where they just have everyone say their names.
That would be fucking rad. So anyway,
it would change my life.
Yongnyu got a baby deer and some kind of frog thing. Not sure. Mm-hmm. Livia Kaiser got a completely round hedgehog. You love to see it.
And she struggled to pick it up. And it was my favorite part of the event was her chasing after the round hedgehog.
So good. Jia Shen got a rainbow guy. I don't know what that is. And then, I think it was actually like a rainbow with legs. I forget. And then a penguin in a unicorn costume, which was many levels of great. Clemence got a pink unicorn. Cheon Kim got a pink cat, a flower, and a lemon guy. Rion got a little blue elephant, and I spelled elephant like elephante.
Elephante.
ELEPFANTE. I don't know where that all came from, but okay. Isabeau got a baguette with face and little leggies, and she says, and I quote, "It's a jelly cat. It's a luxury.
It's a piece of luxury," is what she said.
She said, "It's a piece of luxury." She's right.
And she's right because jelly cats are so expensive, and I want every single one of them. My next competition is on December 7th, and please, please, please spend money on me.
When somebody really takes a minute to appreciate the plushie, that's it. Like, Isabeau has been growing on me, and that really, like, did a lot for me. Kaori got a heart, a flower, and a chipmunk with scarf, so it doesn't get cold. And then my men are a little less organized, which is appropriate. So you might hear some names twice. Max Namov got a flower. Luke Economide, do you pronounce the Economides? I don't know. I'm not sure. It's almost like it's like a Greek name. I feel like
even the French kind of said it both ways.
I'm not sure. But he got a mouse and a hamster costume. So a lot of animals dressed as other animals in this. I support that as long as they're doing it respectfully and like have done the research. Like if this mouse has done the research on hamster culture and it's authentic, then I'm
hamster culture is not your costume.
If you are listening and you're a hamster and you can comment on the authenticity of the mouse's hamster costume, I would love to hear that because I'm white and I just can't. I don't know.
Human and you're
Kind. Adam got a dog dressed as an acorn, which I think is okay because acorns are not sentient. But again, let us know if you're an acorn.
Any of our acorn listeners out there.
Any of our acorn listeners. Luke Economide also got a squirtle and a giraffe. And Max also got a turnip and some penguins. There were some veggies going around to stay on theme with Netta's veggies that are burning. François Pitot got a flower and an orange guy with headphones on. Don't know who that was, but he's chilling. Lucas got a parrot. Mikhail Selevko got a tiny, tiny cheeseburger. Tatsuya got, I said mallard ? I don't know. I wasn't sure what that was, to be honest. Thought maybe a mallard was a strong guess there. Kaomiura got, I'm sorry, I can't say his name right because I'm laughing. He got a penguin mommy and baby. And then in parentheses, I wrote, "Let's practice flopping with mama."
Let's practice flopping. Let's be floppy with mama.
I couldn't remember the wording of the meme, but I was just like,
well, it's always a let's something with, I had to explain that meme to my mom.
I thought it was
She found it delightful. It's always like a let's be blah, blah, blah with mama.
Let's be flopping with mama.
Let's be flopping with mama.
Let's be flightless
meme
with mama. All right. Nika got a Deadpool and some sort of knockoff Muppet, as far as I could tell. Not sure. That also sounds like a mean slur to call someone.
It sounds like something Gordon Ramsay calls someone.
Yeah, it kind of does. And I will write to you, Netta, verbatim what I wrote, and then we will have to probably explain it. But .. And Ilya Malinin, Sarah Lawrence to giant teddy bear, the end.
Oh, my God.
So this is so narrow, but Sarah Lawrence is where we went to graduate school. And at Sarah Lawrence, the slang of Sarah Lawrence as a verb is to walk by someone and not acknowledge them, even though you know them or have maybe known them intimately in some cases.
You see them coming across campus and you decide in that split second that you don't have a nod or a smile in you. So you just pretend to be so not looking. Yeah, and it's a thing all of us do. It's a thing that
it is.
I've Sarah Lawrence do more than once. Let's be so
probably
real.
I probably have to. So he skated by a teddy bear, looked at it, and then decided we're not going to make eye contact. Maybe we're going to like. And
he also stepped over a plushie, which because I was already kind of in my feelings, found very offensive. And then I was like, it's a plushie; it doesn't really have feelings. And then I was like, someone went to a toy store and purchased it and threw it, and was probably very happy that they got it near the exit where he could potentially pick it up and sit with it as he gets his billion points. And then he, like, literally made the effort of stepping over it. I don't know how I feel about that.
I guess my immediate reaction was, like, someone had to then go pick that up. But you know what? Yeah. Like, I'm not going to get in the politics of, like, whether you're a jerk for leaving plushies or not, because I truly can't.
Oh, my God, no. Road. Truly, truly not. But I don't think it matters. People, I think, what Sarah Lawrence thing is.
Anyway, yeah. So now we know. And this is probably the most we've ever talked about grad school on this show. Welcome back. That is our episode. That is the Grand Prix de France. Or if you're really, really pressed about America not being first, you can call it the Grand Prix de Freedom, if that makes you happier.
I can't believe you were talking about America First.
If this is probably everybody's favorite podcast where someone talks about America First on a podcast, right?
Thank you so much for listening. If you're new here, please stick around. We promise we're usually less rambly. It's just our first time back, and we're so, so, so excited to have you. And if you are coming back for the first, second, third, fourth, fifth year in a row, we cannot thank you enough. There are ways to support us. You can hit us up on patreon.com/ICTpod. We are going to be doing a stream for this month where we're going to catch up on things that are happening every weekend because we are in crazy mode. And it is our Halloween stream. And that's all you need to know about it right now. You can find us on the internet. We are at ICTpod. All over, but mostly, frankly, on the dying formerly Bird app. And if you leave us comments elsewhere, we probably will not see them. Thank you for helping us keep the lights on. Thank you for coming back. And we will see you in China.
Yeah. Okay. So I do have to thank all the Patreon patrons. We're so out of the rhythm of this. It's been a minute. I also want to say, if you've ever, unfortunately, we have never, deliberately done a transcript for one of our podcasts. And so if you see a transcript, it's AI generated and it's probably bullshit. As I saw, I think I turned them off. I'm trying to turn them off.
Spotify will try to create them.
Spotify tried to say that I said that Kim Jong-un skated at Four Continents. So if you, I didn't, surprisingly enough, say that. So anyway. I would like to thank our patrons, and I would like to mention that this is a great time to join or rejoin if you've taken a break because we haven't been super active on Patreon. This is like our most active time of year on Patreon, so if you want new content, you know, come on back or join up for the first time. And I want to thank our wonderful patrons, Neve, Cricket, Laura, T, Christine, Rhea, Anna, Mandolin Arts, Robin is Trans and Tired, Tracy, Josiah, Sabrina, Alina, Catherine, Margaret, Robert, Vox Machina, Samantha, Erin, Joseph, KM, Jennifer, Jules, and Jordan. And if I'm pronouncing any of your names wrong, let us know.
Get out the voice app. Let us know. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you so very soon. Love you. Bye.
Bye.